long time coming.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's been months in the making, but this morning, German Chancellor Angela Merkel says she is happy with General Motors' decision to sell its European division, Opel. It's chosen the Canadian auto parts company Magna to buy it. Opel employs nearly 50,000 people overseas. The business professor David Bailey at Coventry University in the UK says it's a smart move for the company.
I think this will be seen as GM offloading a European operation, which is seen as problematic and which needs restructuring. So I think from a point of view of how GM is viewed, it will be seen as positive.
The official announcement from GM is expected to happen in just a few minutes in Berlin. Now, let's check. Where's Wall Street? Numbers are down for the S&P, down about 0.5%, and for the Dow about 0.33%, down 34 points at 95.12. The Nasdaq down about 0.1% this morning. European shares down as well, and Asian stocks closed mostly higher today overseas. Companies seem to be handing out fewer pink slips. The government said today first-time claims for unemployment benefits fell last week. Also, the number of people continuing to receive those benefits fell to the lowest level since early April. Let's bring in Doug Foreman, the director of equities at Highmark Capital, joining us live from San Francisco. Hi, Doug.
Good morning, Steve.
So the headlines on this jobless number appear strong. I mean, I'm wondering, though, did Labor Day or the holiday distort any of this?
Yeah, we think it did. I think basically people had one fewer day during the week because of the Labor Day holiday to go in and file their actual claims. So while the number is better on the surface and we're happy about that, it's debatable how meaningful it is.
And one day could make that much of a difference, huh?
Yes, it can, believe it or not.
The government, Doug, said today the U.S. trade deficit increased the most in more than 10 years in the month of July. Now, put that into perspective for us.
Well, exports during the month grew, but imports, the stuff that we bought from overseas markets, grew even faster. And the two main things that grew really quickly there were cash for clunkers, autos. Dealers had to build up some inventory, obviously expecting some sales, which they got because of the cash for clunkers program that the government has. And also the price of oil went up a lot over the course of the month. So that tends to impact the oil that we import from abroad and makes that number go higher. So those were the two big items in the import column.
Just a quick answer. We heard about foreclosures, Doug, dipping slightly from July to August. Are you convinced these loan modifications are finally working?
No. We think maybe the economy is just getting a little bit better, and we're not quite sure that there's been any major change on the loan modification side.
All right. Doug Foreman joining us from San Francisco. Doug, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Let's take a deeper look at those foreclosure numbers. And Marketplace's John Dimsdale has the latest from Washington.
To accentuate the positive, there are signs that efforts by lenders to modify troubled mortgages may be slowing the spread of foreclosures. The online real estate database RealtyTrack reports today that in August, bank repossessions of homes dropped 13% from July. Also, RealtyTrack's Rick Sharga says new foreclosure filings dropped last month, but only slightly.
The real news is that we nearly set yet another record for foreclosure activity in August. We're only off by 1% from the record level set in July and still up 18% over August from a year ago. So the trends continue to go in the wrong direction.
One in every 357 homes in the country dropped into foreclosure last month. Once again, Nevada, Florida, and California topped the list. Sharga says banks and real estate companies are overwhelmed with the sheer volume of foreclosure processing. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
This morning, Congress reopens its investigation into how government investigators missed Bernie Madoff's $65 billion Ponzi scheme. The Senate Banking Committee will look at a 500-page report issued last week by the Securities and Exchange Commission. Listening to the Morning Report for Thursday, September 10th, 2009, at Marketplace.org. The head of Goldman Sachs is causing a buzz this morning. He attacked what he calls excessive bonuses at a banking conference in Frankfurt. Lloyd Blankfein said the public has reason to be angry over bankers' pay. From the European desk in London, Stephen Beard reports.
Blankfein startled his audience, saying that the furore over bank bonuses was both understandable and appropriate. He called for guaranteed bonuses to be banned, and he condemned what he called outsized compensation when a bank is losing money. Andrew Hilton runs the Centre for the Study of Financial Innovation. He says this is all a bit rich coming from the head of Goldman Sachs.
Blankfein took out $176 million in pay and compensation over the last 5 years. I suppose that he could forego his bonus for at least a couple of years and still manage to support the house in the Hamptons and the yacht in the Bahamas.
In his speech, Blankfein also admitted that banks had lost control of the exotic products they were selling before the crisis. Observers say he was striking a note of contrition before his Frankfurt audience. German banks have lost heavily on asset-backed securities. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The House Judiciary Committee is looking into the Google Books settlement today. That's a deal that Google made with writers and publishers to make most books available on their site. Now, Google scanned millions of titles already, but objections to the deal could throw a big wrench into the online library, as Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
For the rights to display online almost every book ever written, Google paid the Authors Guild and the Association of American Publishers $125 million. The search giant also agreed to pay royalties when somebody read a copyrighted book on Google. Richard Komen is a lawyer and blogger on ZDNet.
They've really gotten together and created essentially a joint venture that basically outsources world literature to Google.
What's in it for Google? Information about you. Komen says Google would add your online reading list to the information it already has on how you search the web. That's a pretty attractive package for marketers and lots of other people. And that's the problem, says Aidan Fine, a senior attorney with the ACLU.
Google will have the ability not just to know what books you're looking at, but they'll know which pages you're looking at and how long you've spent on each page.
Earlier this week, the ACLU added privacy concerns to a litany of antitrust and copyright complaints already surrounding the Google Book deal. Congress isn't the only one looking at it. Federal court will also be reviewing the settlement next month. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
The Phoenix Coyotes are bankrupt, and today the professional hockey team is on the auction block. The National Hockey League wants to keep the Coyotes in Arizona, but BlackBerry billionaire Jim Balsillie's bid could send the team skating back to Canada. Now, whatever the outcome, one thing is certain. Building a successful hockey team in the Sun Belt hasn't been very easy. From Station KJZZ, Peter O'Dowd reports.
Greg Esposito is the type of sports fan who wears a jersey to work, and the thought of his beloved Coyotes moving to Canada makes him sick.
They're like old friends. They're reliable, you know. If they leave, you lose a part of yourself.
The problem is such loyal hockey fans are sort of like rain in the desert. The Coyotes haven't gone to the playoffs in 7 years. The team hasn't made a profit since it came to town from Winnipeg in 1996. Ray Artigue helped bring the team to Phoenix. He says early criticism that hockey wouldn't thrive here may have turned out to be justified.
Hockey in this market winds up being the odd man out in many ways.
That's because the Coyotes compete with three other professional sports teams here. What's more, sports economists say hockey in general doesn't have the fan base to draw the lucrative TV contracts that support other sports leagues.
It's thin gruel for the teams outside of that circle.
That's Clemson University's Raymond Sauer. He says other Sunbelt hockey teams suffer the same fan indifference. The Florida Panthers are seeking buyers. The Thrashers in Atlanta are looking for new investors.
Each one of them has built a business plan that they will be successful on the ice, but it's not possible for all of them to win the Stanley Cup at the same time.
Whatever happens at today's auction, it looks like the Coyotes will get at least one more chance to make money in Arizona. The team's first preseason game is set for Tuesday. In Phoenix, I'm Peter O'Dowd for Marketplace.
It's almost been a year to the day since Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy. The investment bank's demise sent the market into a tailspin, and the nation's financial crisis got even worse. Thousands were left out of work, and one of those people was Dave DeMuro, Lehman's Director of Global Compliance and Regulation. This morning, he tells us how his world changed in his own words.
This time last year, I was at Lehman Brothers, a place that I'd been for about 24 and a half years. It was really a very collegial environment, a place where we worked hard but felt very, very good about what we were doing. And so that added really to the tragedy of the firm's demise. When I got the email that the firm was filing bankruptcy, it's really difficult, kind of difficult to comprehend what that might mean. Certainly by the end of September, I knew that that I would be coming to the end of my tenure. About 30% of the firm was owned by employees, which meant that at the time that the firm went bankrupt, that its employees suffered losses in the billions of dollars. I lost a lot of money, but I think, more to the point, a whole lot of people lost a lot of money as a result of what happened in late 2008. I still have my home. I have a job. I still have enough working brain cells that I'm able to make a living, and for that I'm extraordinarily grateful. My purview and compliance director was to make sure that we were operating within the rules laid down by the regulators and by Congress, and I think that we had largely done that. In retrospect, I wish we hadn't gotten as deeply involved in mortgage securitizations. Sure. Do I wish we hadn't had the level of exposure that we did in the commercial real estate market? Of course. But that's easy to say now, isn't it? What do I think should have happened? Obviously, I would have been much happier had Lehman Brothers continued to exist. I was proud to have worked there, proud of the work that we had done. You know, I'm always going to be disappointed about the fact that we weren't able to make it.
Former Lehman Brothers executive Dave DeMuro. Marketplace's Amy Scott produced that story. You can hear more from Inside Lehman inside our website, marketplace.org. And later today, we're going to examine how the financial collapse a year ago changed the way Americans look at risk. That's later on Marketplace with Kai Ryssdal. Finally, a new General Motors ad campaign begins this weekend. Its CEO will take to the TV talking about brands and its new car lineup. Now, wait a second. That sounds a little familiar.
And a wagon so versatile, so right for America today, we can't build enough of them. Not bad for a company that had one foot in the grave.
Well, yeah, that was Chrysler's Lee Iacocca. Way back in the early 1980s, the company had just come from a near-death experience. Of course, we know Chrysler and GM both filed bankruptcy this year. Now, that's a trip down memory lane no one ever wants to take again. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Thursday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.